This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight,
Boko Haram boasts no agenda other than to murder teachers, burn books, kidnap students, rape women and girls, and slaughter innocent people, most of whom are Muslims.
That's U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry speaking today in the northern Nigerian city of Sokoto. Details coming up.
Also, Nigeria's military claims to have killed Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau and several other high-ranking members of the militant group.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Nigeria's Air Force today claims to have killed Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau and several other high-ranking members of the group. Sani Usman, a spokesman for the Nigerian Air Force, says they were fatally wounded in airstrikes Friday on the Boko Haram stronghold in the Sambisa Forest. Other Boko Haram leaders reported killed in the raid include Abubakar Mubi, Malam Nuhu, and Malam Haman. However, Nigeria has previously claimed three times to have killed Shekau. Those claims were later thrown into doubt then when video surfaced showing a man claiming to be Shekau alive and well. The military statement did not provide any further details about Shekau's death. Boko Haram did not immediately respond to the claims.
In related news, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met today with Nigeria's top Muslim leader in the northern city of Sokoto. VOA's Chris Stein reports from Sokoto.
The traditional ruler of Sokoto, the Sultan of Sokoto, is the highest Muslim leader in Nigeria, and it was at his palace that U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry gave a speech condemning Boko Haram excesses. He said education and opportunity could turn people away from the extremist group.
Boko Haram boasts no agenda other than to murder teachers, burn books, kidnap students, rape women and girls, and slaughter innocent people, most of whom are Muslims.
Boko Haram has killed about 20,000 people and displaced up to 2.7 million in its seven-year insurgency in northern Nigeria. While it once controlled an enclave in Nigeria's northeast, about equal in size to Belgium, troops from Nigeria and its neighbors have since pushed the insurgents out of most of that territory. Shortly before Kerry arrived, Nigeria's army said it had fatally wounded the group's leader in an airstrike. Defeating Boko Haram and other extremist groups elsewhere in Africa will take more than military force, Kerry said.
To win the struggle for the future, nations need to do more than just denounce bankrupt, dead-end ideologies that the terrorists support. They also have to offer their citizens an alternative that is better.
Kerry said corruption must be curbed. That is a major issue in Nigeria, where two-thirds of the people live in poverty in one of Africa's top oil producers and biggest economies.
There is nothing more demoralizing, more destructive, more disempowering to a citizen than the belief that the system is rigged against them.
President Muhammadu Buhari ran for office last year on promises to fight graft, and Kerry says the United States stands behind those efforts.
Already, President Buhari is working with civil society to encourage official transparency and accountability. It is so important to restoring trust among the people.
Despite the country's progress against extremism, Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have charged Nigerian soldiers with torturing Boko Haram suspects and gunning down members of a Shiite Muslim sect and a separatist group. In what is likely a veiled reference to those accusations, Kerry cautioned against government overreaction, saying extremism cannot be defeated through repression. Chris Stein for VOA News, Sokoto, Nigeria.
Thank you, Chris. The World Health Organization and its partners are scaling up emergency humanitarian operations in northeast Nigeria. They're trying to reach people hard hit by the Boko Haram insurgency. Aid groups recently regained access to some 800,000 people who were previously cut off from outside aid. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The World Health Organization recently declared northeastern Nigeria an organizational grade 3 emergency. This is the highest emergency level ascribed to a humanitarian crisis, putting this region on a par with the dire situations in Syria, Yemen, Iraq, and South Sudan. WHO describes the health conditions and needs of 800,000 people who have only recently become accessible to the outside world as nothing short of catastrophic. It estimates mortality rates in some of the areas are four times higher than the emergency threshold. It says the rate of severe acute malnutrition of 14% also exceeds the emergency threshold. This dire situation has been complicated by a polio outbreak. For the first time since 2014, two new cases of this crippling disease were identified among children in Borno State a few weeks ago. In addition, there is an ongoing outbreak of life-threatening measles in the afflicted area. WHO Director of Emergency Risk Management and Humanitarian Response, Rick Brennan, cites a number of other ongoing risks to public health.
In addition to malnutrition, populations have been forced from their homes. They are physically exhausted. Many of them are being housed in overcrowded, unsanitary situations, increasing the risk of outbreaks. The vaccination coverage rate amongst the children is very, very, very low indeed. And now we're into the wet season, and the risks of seeing increased rates of diseases such as malaria, diarrheal diseases, as well as the vaccine-preventable diseases like measles and so on, are very, very substantial.
Aid workers could not access parts of Borno and Yobe State for months while fighting raged between Boko Haram and government forces. Brennan says WHO and partners are taking immediate steps to tackle the ongoing problems despite continued security risks. He says the government, with the support of UN agencies, has launched an emergency polio vaccination campaign. He says the first round, targeting 1 million children, soon will be completed. Other rounds will follow. Brennan says the WHO is also sending emergency drugs and supplies to the region. He's appealing to donors to provide the money needed to save thousands of lives. He says WHO has received only 15% of its $25 million appeal. He warns many people are likely to die if WHO is unable to close this critical funding gap. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A new program in northern Cameroon is giving families displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency a pair of goats to help them get back on their feet. Reporter Moki Edwin Kinzeka traveled to the town of Mozogo to check on the program, and he has this report.
40-year-old Buka Abba pulls his two goats outside the fence behind his house in Mozogo, a town on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria.
Sur le plan quotidien, on peut payer les frais de scolarité pour nos enfants.
He says he expects to raise the goats and make money to take care of his children's health, school needs, and food. He says he expects to be able to sell baby goats in the future and make some profit, but he says he still has to travel a long distance to fetch water for them. He got the goats this month as part of an initiative by the French Red Cross and the government of Cameroon. Families impacted by the conflict against Boko Haram are given a pair of goats. The family keeps the goats until they produce offspring. Then the parent goats will be passed on to another family in need. Mujer Diodone works for the French Red Cross official, which is piloting the project.
L'activité consiste à donner à chaque ménage bénéficiaire.
He says they are targeting 510 households. People participating will also benefit from counseling to help deal with violence inflicted on them during the conflict. He says they are also teaching them good hygiene norms and techniques to take care of the goats and their food to stop illnesses. Goats have been distributed to about 200 people so far. Boko Haram has been carrying out attacks in northern Cameroon for more than 3 years. The conflict has hit the local economy hard. Cameroon's National Institute of Statistics reports the unemployment rate at the border with Nigeria is over 90%. The government says poverty makes youth vulnerable to recruitment into Boko Haram. Many youth abandoned raising livestock in their villages amid the violence. Dieudonné of the Red Cross says insecurity is still a concern.
On est confronté à quelques difficultés. Je vais citer par exemple le contexte.
He says it makes it very difficult for aid workers to reach places where there are displaced persons. He says the people who benefit from this initiative also continue to move around for safety to new localities, and in such cases, it is not easy to retrieve the goods and hand them off to other families. Earlier this year, the United Nations, along with international NGOs and the governments of Cameroon and Japan, built a livestock market at the village of Zamai, where youth can sell the goods they raise. Cameroon also provided $4 million of emergency funds to create jobs for youth on its northern border with Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Mozogo.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yeis Wuhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Nigeria's military claims to have killed Boko Haram leader Abubakar Shekau and several other high-ranking members of the militant group. And U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met today with Nigeria's top Muslim leader in the northern city of Sokoto. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The World Health Organization says there are more than 100 public health emergencies in Africa every year. But African health ministers meeting in Addis Ababa have adopted a strategy to deal with them. They gathered at the WHO's Regional Committee for Africa meeting, which ended today. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The WHO says diseases know no boundaries, adding there's a need for stronger collaboration to protect national, regional, and global health security. Dr. Magna Robalo is Director for Communicable Diseases at the agency's Regional Office for Africa. She says the continent experiences a wide range of public health emergencies.
Most of them are caused by infectious diseases, and here we are talking about outbreaks of cholera, outbreaks of yellow fever, outbreaks of Zika, etc. But we also have other emergencies that are not necessarily caused by infectious diseases. You have environmental challenges, but we also have lead poisoning in some countries. We have alcohol poisoning in some places, which cause the public health emergencies.
The nearly $107 million strategy is made up of 10 technical documents concerning such topics as malaria, tuberculosis, hepatitis, and HIV/AIDS.
Essentially, the strategy on HIV/AIDS is recommending to member states to fast-track implementation of prevention and treatment measures against HIV/AIDS. And we are looking into embarking on rigorous operational research, improving the collection of data so that we get an even better understanding of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, and calling upon member states to improve the domestic financing.
The 47 African health ministers attending the WHO regional meeting also endorsed an oral health strategy through 2025.
It's true that very often you hear more about HIV/AIDS, TB, malaria, and maternal and child health, but oral health is a major challenge in our region. It's part of the non-communicable diseases program that we have in the regional office.
The WHO says oral health problems can impact the quality of life, not only due to pain, but the cost of treatment. Risk factors include tobacco and alcohol use and a diet high in sugar. The WHO says, however, efficient and low-cost treatments could be brought to where people live. The strategy includes prevention programs in schools, communities, and primary health centers. The health ministers also agreed to boost ties with China on improving health care and to move ahead with an African version of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It's a leading agency during disease outbreaks, not only in the United States, but abroad. Another part of the African health strategy, endorsed at the Addis Ababa meeting, is ensuring a healthy and dignified life for the continent's older population. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Germany has announced it will accept several hundred migrants and refugees who are now in Italy. Italy is the main destination for thousands of migrants and refugees crossing the Mediterranean from North Africa, especially Libya. Many have to be rescued at sea because they are sailing in unsafe boats or rafts. The Associated Press reports Germany's interior minister says the move is part of the European Union's plan to relocate those in need of protection. He called on other nations to follow Germany's lead. Also, Italy's foreign minister is calling on the EU to make a similar deal with Libya as it did with Turkey. The deal, which took effect in March, greatly reduced the number of Syrian and other refugees fleeing to Greece. Meanwhile, Greek officials say they're developing a plan to give labor rights to refugees and give them access to long-term shelter. There are nearly 60,000 migrants and refugees in Greece.
The 2016 National Ryan White Conference on HIV Care and Treatment opened today here in Washington, D.C. About 2,400 people have gathered to collaborate and share best practices to improve care for HIV/AIDS patients. The conference is named after Ryan White, an American teenager who became a national poster child for HIV/AIDS. He was diagnosed as being HIV positive in 1984 after contracting the virus through a blood transfusion. White was expelled from school because of fear of the disease. He died in 1990. Dr. Laura Cheever is a physician and associate administrator for the HIV/AIDS Bureau of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. She spoke with me about White's legacy, as well as the progress and ongoing challenges in the prevention and treatment of HIV/AIDS.
Ryan White was an incredibly courageous Indiana teenager who was diagnosed with HIV when he was quite young, and his desire was to go to school. He was given just a few months to live, and he wanted to be able to go to school and live a normal life during that time, and was really shunned by his school and was not allowed to attend school. So he made it his legacy, really, to educate people about HIV, how it was transmitted, and as a result, when the Ryan White Care Act was passed, legislation to support HIV care and treatment for people around this country, they named it in honor of him. August 18th marks the 26th anniversary of the signing of that bill into law.
How has, first of all, the stigma of HIV/AIDS changed over time?
Stigma continues to be a major problem in HIV care and treatment. Stigma continues in this country at a very high rate, although what we've learned about the disease and what we can do in terms of care and treatment has drastically changed. When Ryan White was diagnosed, most people diagnosed at the time would live less than a year. Today, if someone is diagnosed and put on therapy and stays on their treatment, they can live a near normal lifespan. So that has changed. And we know also that if someone is on medication and taking it regularly, such that the virus is completely suppressed in their blood, they're not cured, we don't have a cure, but the virus is suppressed, their risk of transmitting HIV to someone else is almost zero. So much has changed, and yet the stigma really remains in many communities.
Is the stigma basically one of fear, fear of catching the disease?
The stigma is obviously complicated. So part of it is fear, and part of it is feeling that someone who has the disease is dirty or has done something wrong or bad. Those are all part of it. Certainly in this country, still HIV is a disease that's much more common among gay men. Gay men of color, the CDC estimated in this country, have a 1 in 2 chance of getting HIV in their lifetime. So there's a lot of issues around homophobia tied up in that as well.
So what are some of the new advancements in HIV care and treatment?
Two things I'd like to highlight are, one, we're definitely going to be highlighting the important role of people living with HIV in planning at the local level around a care and treatment services. Our legislation requires we have people living with HIV be a part of that, and we are going to be highlighting the leadership that people living with HIV have and what they bring to our federal response. The other important thing I think we'll be discussing is the framework of what's called getting to zero or ending AIDS or ending the epidemic. It's called many different things in different cities, and this is where cities or states have really taken on the mandate to end AIDS in their jurisdictions and the increasing number of new cases to actually decrease the number of cases every year. And they're having some great success by really taking a broad public health approach, figuring out where the hot spots are in their community, directing resources there, directing resources to certain populations that are at highest risk, like young gay men of color, providing leadership, developing new partnerships, and doing things differently. And we have seen some great success in places like San Francisco and New York that have taken this on. So we'll be highlighting jurisdictions, Fulton County in Georgia, in the Atlanta area, Washington, D.C., the state of Washington, other cities as well.
Despite the efforts of putting information out there regarding preventing HIV/AIDS, it is still an epidemic in the United States. Why is that?
The reason why we continue to struggle with HIV in this country are multifold. The first thing is it really is a disease of poverty in this country. When we look at the Ryan White HIV/AIDS program, we serve over 500,000 people a year, which is over half of all the people living with HIV. A majority of those people live below the federal poverty line. So there are lots of structural barriers to having good health outcomes among people living with HIV. 73% of all the people we serve are racial and ethnic minorities, and so we really need to focus on addressing those disparities. And in fact, we've made some very good progress. When we really have good leadership at the state or local level, at the jurisdictional level, we've been able to accomplish some great things.
Dr. Laura Cheever is Associate Administrator for the HIV/AIDS Bureau at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. She spoke with me from Rockville, Maryland.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next on Straight Talk Africa. How do you think Africa fared at the 2016 Rio Olympics? Chaka Sali and his guests will review the 2016 Olympics. That's next on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
The U.S. presidential election takes place on November 8, 2016. VOA provides extensive coverage of this important political event. Who are the candidates and what are the issues that will determine who the next president will be? Tune in around the clock for coverage of the U.S. presidential election right here on VOA.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day.
Some things change, some remain the same.
From the north to the south and the east to the West. We play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC GMT right here on VOA Africa.